Tobler, Truth Warrior, Woke Destroyer, on News Talk STL. Watch us on our live stream using Rumble, Facebook, and Twitter. Talk lines are open now at 314-912-1019.
I want you to take a listen to Jonathan Turley's analysis, and I think it's a poignant one. It was really a metaphor that really struck home with me. After Judge McAfee down in Fulton County, Georgia, basically gave Fannie Willis a pass yesterday. You get rid of Nathan Wade and you can go ahead and prosecute Trump and all of the co-defendants. Nathan Wade resigned, by the way. He's now done. I don't know. I don't think they're still a thing romantically, nor do I care. But I don't. Do you care, Jerome? I don't really care. But
not even
there's people that I guess do care. Yeah, I don't know. I think the tabloid crowd may care about that, but I don't care. The same people that are wondering if Kate Middleton. I can't believe the Kate Middleton hysteria. Is she dead? Is it whatever the United Kingdom Mother's Day equivalent? A picture comes out that she later says is Photoshop, but one of her kids had four fingers, and they're saying maybe. I even someone said maybe that wasn't Kate. That Harry has a is it Harry or William? William Harry? I don't know. No, William, I guess. William has a mistress that looks like her. I mean, it's just crazy. At any rate, where was I going with this? Oh, Fannie Willis. The preposterous judgment, the guy basically said, yes, she did everything where she made all kinds of poor judgment. She is really needs to be looked at by four or five other organizations and regulatory agencies and oversight entities. And here's what Jonathan Turley said about that situation.
Avoided the cliff, but it did not avoid the questions that will inevitably come up. You know, it's like, you know, finding two people in a bank vault and taking one off to jail. I mean, the question is.
Well, there you go. I mean, it's like there's a bank heist going on. The cops come in and see two people in the vault and, oh, let's only take one away. I don't understand it. And again, it's more of that elitism. But here's where politics comes into play. The judge, late in the trial or shortly after the trial was over, the judge has a challenger, a Democrat challenger enters the race. Oh, by the way, did you see that McAfee had donated to Fannie Willis's campaign a few years ago? Now, that may have just been a token donation. A lot of people will do that. They will donate just out of civility, you know, and perhaps he at that point was not a judge. I don't think so. And may have been in front of her. Who knows? Well, how does that sound? Well, that looks bad too, doesn't it? Hmm. Not in front of her, but because she was working as a DA in front of him or as an attorney in front of him, if he was a judge, could have been that. All that said, the other big thing that happened this week was, the Robert Hur hearing. I thought it was powerful hearing. Robert Hur, of course, the special counsel appointed to investigate the Corvette garage documents from Joe Biden, along with UPenn and others, a Delaware office as well, three different repositories for documents going back to his time as a senator all the way up through time as Vice President Joe Biden. And Robert Hur did himself well, but I think Jim Jordan, as he opened it up, really sort of summarized it. Here's a little bit of that.
Robert Hur was appointed special counsel on January 12, 2023. He had a fundamental question to address. Did Joe Biden unlawfully retain classified information? The answer, yes, he did.
And of course, again, more equivocation on the part of Robert Hur. It's funny how these prosecutors split hairs when they're people in powerful positions. Not so much hair splitting if it's you or me being prosecuted. We don't have slick lawyers. We can't afford them generally. I don't think judges and prosecutors really care about the little people. I think they, once they've, especially if you're a politically, active little person. Better look over your shoulder, Jerome, and everyone listening, because, you know, if you're vocal about your politics, they can use the state against you. They can use the laws against you. They can selectively prosecute. I've said it once and I'll say it again. If you don't think that you're inadvertently breaking some rule, some regulation, either at work or at home, or maybe with your tax filing that you're totally unaware of, you are. And they can catch you. John Stossel did a very nice piece on this several years ago. He went into a bar owner and a plumber and several, and basically, you know, brought in and said, you know, you're in violation of this law. You violate the law all the time. And it's only by the grace of God that some prosecutor who's not angry at you, maybe some political opponent, maybe you're running for city councilman, maybe you're running for school board, office, and they do some Oppo research on you. They find that you got a business, and they find that you were late on your taxes and you had to pay a penalty. Well, maybe they need to go after you. Then they get you in the courtroom, and then they ask you questions, and you can't recall. You try to answer because you're not smart enough, slick enough to say, I don't recall, over and over and over and over again. And then when you do try to honestly answer to the best of your ability, and you misspeak, you say something that is wrong, and guess what happens? Oh, you lied. You perjured yourself. Oh, we better put the leg irons on you. Don't say it doesn't happen. Look at the J6 people. Look, if they did a misdemeanor and they need to be prosecuted, okay, prosecute them. Why do you have to hold them in jail? Why do you have to 2 years later go in with, you know, seven armed FBI agents and take them away? I just don't understand it. And Fannie Willis puts on this contemptuous, disrespectful testimony that she did in front of this judge. She gets away with it. He lets her go on. If you and I did that, I don't think a judge would let us get away with it. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't think I am. Depends who you are, who you know, what you believe, whether you got a donkey on your shirt or you got an elephant on your shirt. That plays into it too. And it's sad. It's really sad. But hopefully what we'll get to is a time in this country we can get back to a Trump-esque kind of a thought pattern. He wasn't as successful as he said he was. Of course, he's never as successful as he says he is. But when it came to regulations, you know, it was like for every one that's passed, we got to take two away. Remember that? He was reasonably successful in taking away some of those things. You know, there is a good, speaking of that, when we talk to our congressional candidates coming up here, we're going to be talking to an incumbent and a challenger for congressional district number 12 in Illinois. I'm going to ask them what they think about this bill that is, I think it's both in the Senate and the House, and I have to look up the number. But it's basically the Congressional Review Act, very, very important act, to where when Congress passes a law, okay, then the regulatory agency involved or agencies have to then translate that law into rules and regulations that go into the United States Code. That's where the real lawmaking occurs. I mean, you know, yeah, there's some language in the statutes that gives guidelines and sets up the framework. But when it comes to the actual rubber meets the road, what does everyday citizen Joe and Judy have to do to comply with the law? Say you're a business person, say you're a citizen, and it has to do with taxes or whatever. Okay, the IRS makes the law. The EPA makes the law. If you're in agriculture, the USDA, they actually make the rules and regulations, which are the implementation of the law. Well, we've seen the abuse of that and the rise of the strength and power of the bureaucratic state, the fourth branch of government. And those people can ruin your life. They can ruin your business. They can bankrupt you because of some cockamamie rule that they make that is an overinterpretation because of their wild-eyed ideology that they apply and somehow fit within the statute. Well, the Congressional Rule Act would say, no, Congress would have the ability and maybe the obligation to look at the rules that come out of the statutes that they pass. And I think that would be the best thing that could ever happen to this country, well, one of the best things that could happen to federal legislation, I wish it would happen at all levels, frankly. I think it should happen in Missouri. I can tell you from a healthcare standpoint, some of the silly things are just ridiculous. I mean, one size fits all rules that if you're, you're Washington University or St. Louis University or Missouri Baptist Hospital or Mercy Hospital or St. Clair or St. Luke's, you have to comply with, adult size rules. But someone, a chiropractor, a doctor, a nurse practitioner working, out in exurban Metro St. Louis or on the Illinois side, tries to apply those same rules, have the same quality of internet technology to secure the records. Oh, God forbid, Well, that's just one example. I'm very familiar of that. The security laws that you have to do to jump through and the hoops and the IT, little guys don't have the ability to do that. Oh, well then, Randy, then you just have to be a part of a big guy. How's that working out for you? People who get care from big, Leviathan organizations. How's that working out for you? I tried to take a pap smear in the other day. Personally walked a pap smear in to the University of Missouri lab in Columbia. That's a month ago. And I didn't get a result back, even though I had on the requisition, I had the number, I had my name, my fax number, please fax the result to me. A couple weeks go by, I haven't gotten anything back, and I'm like, man, I got to get that result to that patient. Last night, ladies and gentlemen, I spent 45 minutes switchboard to the lab. No one answers at one hospital. Then the switchboard, oh, you got the wrong line. Then you got the... Finally, a very nice lady in the laboratory spent some time, got into the computer and looked it up. Now, this is nothing against University of Missouri. They do a fine job. This is about consolidation. That's what the rules in this country and the bureaucratic state are leading to. You know it. If you're in small business, many of you are. I know this. You're in small business. You're just a little tadpole in the pond. Just trying to fend for yourself. And it's very, very difficult to try to navigate the same engines and turn the same cranks of commerce and business and communication and distribution as a big guy. And if you're a patient, you know what it means. You go to a big place, you can't talk to a human. That's the other thing. I try to talk to an insurance company. In my office, I do all of that work. I call, you need to pre-authorize this, you need to pre-authorize that. Why are you ordering this? Why are you? Because a patient needs it. So you call the line. My wife witnessed it. An hour and 20 minutes, I was on various phone calls trying to get a silly MRI on a knee on someone who can't walk on their knee anymore. Looks like a hand grenade went out on the plain x-ray. And I'm telling you, it's like an act of Congress. But trying to speak to someone itself is ridiculous. Well, I don't know. I just go down the rabbit hole of... what's happened to our country? We can't talk to a human being anymore. There's protections with the AI and the robotic call and the automatic, and then you lose the connection. You try to give a customer service rep, can I give you my number? You can call me back. Typically, they're in the Philippines. No, I cannot do that. I do not have authority to do that. What the hell? Drives you crazy. You know what I mean, Jerome, right? You know what I mean, customer service?
Yeah, no, I don't even bother half the time. You'll be on the phone line for 20, 30 minutes sometimes, and they say, well, we can call you back. An hour or two will go by, and by that time, they're asking you for information that is, you've already started doing something else, and now they want all this extra information that you have to go through all of your emails, and then sometimes it feels like they get impatient with you, or that they're, you're inconveniencing them.
It's
What's going on here? I'm the one that called you,
Yeah. Yeah, get a load of this. So I wanted to get this MRI for a patient. And I'm calling, I'm on the road, right? I'm driving. Oh, wait a minute. Maybe the highway patrol shouldn't know that. Oh, sorry. At any rate, and I'm driving, but I'm on hands-free. Okay, my wife's navigating. She's got her phone. But, mobile devices trying to look up information in electronic medical record. It's a little bit dicey, And so I finally get to someone. I said, look, What is your provider identification number? It sounds is very utopian. What is your national provider identification number? I say, I don't remember it. I don't know. It's like 9 digits long. Then we look it up. We give it. What is the patient's member ID number? Those of you in the medical field, you know what I mean? And then get a load of this. What is the identification number of the facility that you're ordering the radiology test at? I said, you got to be kidding. I'm supposed to know the identification number for Radiology Central. I'm making up the name. I said, come on, you're joking, right? No, sir. I'm like, sorry, I guess this conversation's done. Why am I supposed to know the provider identification number? Look it up in the book. You guys are the ones we're doing business with that. So then it gets better. What is the ICD? What is the procedure code of the test you're ordering? I said, ma'am, I'm just a stupid physician. I don't do coding. I'm not a coder. I know that I need this test for my patient, blah, blah, blah. And, well, I'll set up a ticket for you. Can you write? I started laughing. I finally had to just finish the call because I became hysterical. It was just so funny. You know, it was just ridiculous. This is what our country's come to. You can't talk to anyone. No one gives a darn. They just punch in the clock. When you finally do get someone in customer service who actually cares and actually is a problem solver rather than a process proceeder, a process implementer, you thank them. I just gushingly thank them. God bless you. You're the best person in the world. Thank you very much. Well, enough of that. Let's go ahead and we're going to step aside. And then when we talk to, we'll ask Darren Bailey about that. When he joins us at 7 here in a little bit, we're going to talk to this congressional candidate for CD12 in Illinois. Stay tuned. More coming up on The Randy Tober Show.
Here she come now, say moaning, moaning. Randy Tobler, truth warrior, woke destroyer on News Talk STL. Watch us on our live stream using Rumble, Facebook, and Twitter. This is News Talk STL.
Hey, welcome back to the program. We're featuring the candidates this morning for Illinois' congressional district number 12 in the People's Republic of Illinois. And Darren Bailey joins us now, challenging the incumbent. How you doing, Mr. Bailey? Welcome to the program.
Hey, good morning. It's a beautiful day here in Illinois, and I love your announcement, woke destroyer. I think that probably defines me best. And unfortunately, we've got to destroy that in our own Republican Party before we focus on the Democrats, because that's our problem. So I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Well, yeah, and you're a former state senator, right? And I understand you didn't take a legislative pension and emphasize tax relief for hardworking Illinoisans. That doesn't get tax relief is a foreign concept in the People's Republic of Illinois, isn't it?
Well, it is, and that's what I'm dealing with right now. So, yes, I served one term as a state representative, one term as a senator, and we created a movement. I sued J.D. Pritzker when no one else would stand up against him in 2020 with this lockdown. We actually won that lawsuit, went around the state on a reopen tour, and stood up, got kicked out of the General Assembly for not wearing my mask. And January 1st, I stood on my doorstep with my some of my rifles and told J.B. Pritzker, I'm not registering them. What are you going to do about them? So all of this culminates to what true elected servants need to be doing. They need to be representing and standing up for the concerns of the people. And instead, my opponent is continually going around talking about, you know, bringing the bacon back to the district. And people aren't understanding that that's tax dollars. We need to be living within our means. We can be fixing our roads. We can be doing what we need to be doing. But every year, government here in Illinois, statewide and federal, my opponent has voted for every tax increase since he's in the last 10 years in Congress. And not only that, but right now here in Illinois, our biggest concern and what's costing us so much is illegal immigration. My opponent in Congress has voted multiple times to grant amnesty to millions of illegal aliens. And today we're giving them free food. We're giving them housing. We're giving them free medical. We're taking better care of them than we're taking care of our own people, and especially than we're taking care of our veterans. And it's absolute nonsense, and it's got to stop.
All right. We're talking with Darren Bailey, who's a candidate for CD12 in Illinois, baileyforillinois.com, the website. Tell us your story. I was fascinated. You're a family farmer, married to your wife for 37 years. But I was interested in the fact that you founded the Full Armor Christian Academy, preschool through grade 12. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I love that. Cindy and I, we're actually high school sweethearts. We met at an oil belt Christian service camp in Flora, Illinois, when we were both going into high school, and her dad had just been hired to be the principal of our high school, and my dad sat on the school board. So we met there and fell in love and went through high school, 2 years of college, got married, started a family, very invested in our church. I served 17 years on the North Clay School Board here in Louisville. She was a small business owner at the time as I farmed, and we have four children. We have 13 grandchildren. And basically, when I got off of the school board in 2012, we had pretty awesome school system here in Louisville. If you walked into the place, you would have thought at the time in the day that it was a Christian school. Teachers, we just had awesome staff and people, and that's ultimately what it's all about. But my son, he loved farming with me. He was going into high school and he wanted to be homeschooled, and we had to kind of step back a little bit and say, well, anything wrong? What's going on here? Because he was kind of the star pupil at school and the athlete, but he wanted to farm, and he knew that he could get some of his studies done in the morning and come to the farm with me. So we obliged that. Our pastor's wife was a teacher that wasn't working. She came and tutored him, and that grew. The next year, two of his friends who were homeschooled joined him. The third year, we had 9 high schoolers and 9 junior hires and another staff member. And then eventually, there was a Methodist campground north of Louisville here, Epworth Camp, and they decided to sell. And we had 60 hard commitments that year. So anyway, that's just how we live life. God opens a door. We walk through it. That's why I'm in politics. I want to be farming with my kids, but I'm really concerned and frustrated at the future that our current elected officials have given them. It's wrong. So, Full Armor Christian Academy. We've got 2 campuses, one in Louisville, one in Alney. We've got almost 300 students, as you said, preschool through a high school, and actually tonight I'm on the campaign trail tonight or today, and tonight we're having our second annual gala at Louisville, and it's a sold out event. So school choice is important. School choice is the only thing that is going to save public education, and that's why President Trump has he's said one of his goals are to offer vouchers so that we can have school choice, and I fought for that hard as I served on the education committees in both in Springfield and the House and the Senate, and I will be standing fast on that. So
Mr. Bailey, we're at a time where it's an interesting discussion going on in conservative / Republican circles. If you look at the performance of the Trump-backed, the Trump movement, the new GOP candidates in the last couple cycles, they have not fared well. And there's this discussion about the need for cultural reform, and I'm with you on where you're at. I'm a Christian, and I think that those Judeo-Christian values were part and parcel and absolutely necessary. As John Adams said, for a moral and religious people with a freedom loving constitution like we have, you have to have those guardrails that the good faith does to you. However, there have been discussions, and I think pragmatic discussions about the difference between a Christian nation and a nation of Christians. And I think a lot of people are repelled, even those who might be center-right independents, and you and I both know those are the people that are going to make the difference in the election, both in your congressional race as well as the presidential race. That would say, hey, look, I'm just not comfortable with, I like those values, but I'm not comfortable with, basically a theocracy. And that's the way they paint it hyperbolically. How do you address those concerns about people that say, hey, we are a people of religious freedom in this country, and let's not overdo it when it comes to so-called Christian nationalism? What are your thoughts about that argument?
So I'm appalled by that 100%. As a matter of fact, a well-known speaker and author that I used to subscribe to, you know, recently said that a few weeks ago. Gosh, what would our founding fathers have thought if they subscribed to that as well? We wouldn't be here. We'd be flying the British flag. So we are all the way from the Mayflower Compact. You know, unfortunately, our schools aren't teaching that anymore. I learned the Mayflower Compact. We studied this is in junior high and high school. And we studied and learned what the Articles of Confederation, the Federalist Papers were. It's nuts that we're not, because a quick read and a brief study will we find out that we are. Are everything that we believe and value, and that this, the foundation of this country, is embedded with, you know, biblical works. We are a nation founded on God's word. We're here because Christians were fleeing religious persecution, and for the church to take a back seat, that it's dangerous. And actually, I believe that's what is causing the problems that we are having today. So the church is kind of like World War II, where America was the sleeping giant. The church is the sleeping giant today. And if we fail and refuse to, talk about the issues, educate people on the importance of standing up and voting, we have the power. We here in Illinois, that's why I ran for governor 2 years ago, because if we found out with that, if 60% of all registered voters, and let's not forget, pretty well across the nation, of everyone who is old enough to vote, eligible to vote, only 70% are registered. And of that 70, if only 60% of those would show up and vote, and in 2021, with Pritzker's tyranny here, it just thought, wow, we're going to have 70, 80, maybe even 100% voting. But on November 8th of 2022, and Cindy and I are in a church every Sunday. We were in the governor's race and a different church. We get invited. We're in the churches, and many times they'll let us speak for a few moments. And I don't stand up there and say, hey, vote for me, don't vote for the other guy. No, I press into the church's our God-given obligation and duty to show up and vote. But that's what happened here in Illinois. November 8th of 2022, we had a 45% turnout. And, the Democrats, with early voting, mail-in voting, fraud, whatever you want, they pack that bottom, they get their votes in. We can outnumber them if we show up and vote. But so many people are frustrated, they're apathetic, and we see that throughout the Old Testament. I'm reading in, where Moses, they're coming into the Promised Land, and the people, they had their good days, then they were out of water, then they were out of food, then they had, we're people, we're human, I get that. But we're also Americans. We're Christian America, a nation founded on the Word of God. And if we will claim that and stick to that, nothing needs changed in the Republican platform. What we need to change is the people like my opponent who are failing to stand firm and offer relief to the people and truly represent them, because people have needs. They get these letters from IRS and Veterans Affairs and education situations. And, we have... That's the true purpose of a representative, to help people through government. But unfortunately, I've got a congressman over here that votes for every budget, and every time he votes for the budget for the past 10 years, it fast tracks $500+ million to Planned Parenthood, yet he's got the gall to stand up and say he's pro-life. He stands up against several of the Second Amendment, some of the infringements that's taking place right now. He supports some of that stuff, yet he says he's 100%, pro-gun. And he continues to raise taxes and says, I'm 100%, pro-family. And he says he's a hard worker, but we look back at how he's got a 50%, freedom score with a lot of these scorecards. And we look back at the 2023 calendar year and see that absolutely nothing got done in Congress. And that has got to stop, because we're going to lose our nation if we don't start. If we don't clean house, demand more out of the Republican Party, and start electing people to speak up and actually fight for what has been taken.
We're talking with Darren Bailey. He's running against the incumbent for the large, boy, it looks like about the bottom third of the lower third of the state of Illinois, large district, large rural district. Let me ask you a devil's advocate question, Mr. Bailey. I mean, you and I both know that the USDA is the largest welfare program in the country. You're a farmer. GOP has always backed the agricultural folks, and I'm not making a judgment here, but I mean, free food for people, which, helps subsidize farmers, which then you get, crop insurance subsidies and so forth. How do you feel about reforming that particular branch of government that is really, in a way, another redistributionist program? I think there are good arguments for it. How do you package that for folks that say from the urban lands, well, look at those farmers. They belly up to the USDA, the service center, and they get their, they get their help from the government, too. How do you counter that?
Absolutely. Well, one thing that I'm well known for is educating the people. And that's exactly in 2017 when I discovered my state representative was supporting a 32% tax increase at that time and probably the most conservative district I will contend in the nation. I simply started speaking up about it. And when I started speaking up, people started finding out and understanding what was going on. And next thing I know, they're saying, hey, represent us. So, and all through my 4 years in Springfield, I educated, I informed, and I helped people understand the process of government. So I'm going to say right now, when we take a look at the ag program, the farm bill, and isn't it a shame that here we are, they're pushing all this past the primaries. Primary is March 19th, this coming Tuesday here in Illinois, and our budget and our farm bill, they're shoving it all over the line there. And I don't think that's by mistake. But when we start understanding the farm bill, the first thing that speaks out or shows up is that of the farm bill, we've got to realize that 90%+ of that goes to SNAP benefits, goes to these food benefits. So keep that in mind, 90%+. But a lot of people think that farmers used to be a joke, why are farmers' bills, folded in half? Because that's back in the 80s, because they've always got their heads in the mailbox getting a check. Well, that was true for a short time in the 80s, and that simply didn't work. Farmers are not farming, receiving checks. As a matter of fact, the only time today that farmers, and it's been this way for 20 years, the only time that farmers receive benefits is basically this safety net, because if farmers had to buy crop insurance, you simply couldn't afford it. And with the, we are at the mercy, well, two things. We're at the mercy of the weather, first of all. That's the main thing, whether it rains or whether it doesn't. And then we're at the mercy of the federal government. See, I don't get to go out, I don't get to, like a lumber yard, I don't get to buy lumber and say I'm going to mark it up like this. I am at the mercy of how the government issues reports and what they do with imports and exports. And right now today, for example, soybean and corn prices are $2 a bushel less than they were at harvest time. And I'll tell you right now, for most farmers, that's $2 a bushel less than a break even price. So educating the people, letting them know that, number one, the bulk of the money that goes towards SNAP benefits. And then I truly believe what you said, accountability. We've got to make sure that the people getting these benefits need these benefits. And we need to be educating some of these parents and some of these families how to feed their children better and how to, so there's a whole lot packaged in there. And then there's 5, 6, 7% that goes to forestry. And then the remaining percent and a half goes to farmers. So education.
That is... Mr. Bailey, that is the most concise and I think effective pushback against what I think is always misunderstood, that there's nothing. I think most Americans are fine with a safety net, but they don't want it to turn into a hammock. And it's great that you explained it that way. Hey, well, I wish you the best in your run here in just coming up next Tuesday. Right. So
We look forward to .com. Go to our Facebook page, and I hope I earn your vote. And I look forward to talking to you on the other side of this.
I enjoyed the conversation so very much. Thanks, and all the best to you. Take care.
Thank you for the opportunity.
All right, there he is, Darren Bailey. Impressive candidate. We'll talk to the incumbent, Mike Bost, a little bit later. He'll be coming on with us at 8:25, so you want to stay tuned for that. And certainly a powerful message there from Mr. Bailey. When we come back, Virginia Cruda, we'll talk to her about what's going on TikTok and in Fulton County. Stay tuned for more on The Tober Show.
That has got to stop. we're going to lose our nation if we don't start, if we don't clean house, demand more out of the Republican Party, and start electing people to speak up and actually fight for what has been taken.
Welcome back to the program. Every week this time, we talk to Virginia Cruda. And Virginia, there's so many things to talk about. I don't know where to start, but I guess we start with TikTok. And out of nowhere, after a national security briefing, all of a sudden, it's kumbaya in the House. They pass a divest TikTok in 180 days or else rule. And now it's over to the Senate. Where do you stand on this? Is it an infringement on rights or is it a protection of our national security if it goes away?
It's a tough one to call because, you know, you're talking about regulating a company that's owned by a foreign entity, right? And to say that, you know, we're banning in the United States a company that's the problem is that there are so many companies in the United States that do have part owners that are from outside the United States. My issue with this bill is not that it is a ban on TikTok, because I think we all understand the risk posed by TikTok, right? That mm-hmm. the Chinese company that owns it is collecting data on Americans. And the Chinese company also can control the algorithm to the point that it can influence content that Americans see, right? So mm-hmm. those are certainly things that could be threats to national security, because you think that, you know, the Democrats wringing their hands about, you know, Russian election interference on Facebook, you think that's serious? Think about what China could do with TikTok if there was a particular candidate they favored or didn't favor, you know. And if you're going to get young people out to vote, you flood TikTok, right.
Yeah.
So that and that's so you see an election overly influenced by the 18 to 25 who typically don't vote and are probably not overly informed on issues other than the one that's been in their face on TikTok. And so they're basically voting the way TikTok told them to. That concerns me. But here's what concerns me about the bill. Where are the provisions that say if the company is owned by the United States and behaves in the same manner, or by a company in the United States and behaves in a similar manner, the president does not have the power to shut it down? Where's the provision that states that? Because do we want free speech and free association, or do we not? Because if there's a company that American citizens want to do business with, where doesn't the First Amendment prevent the government from telling them they can't? To a degree. I mean, so that's my question and my concern with the bill is that there are some First Amendment concerns. There are some concerns about how much power it gives the executive. So that's really where I would.
Okay.
The issue is that there are a lot of people who are suggesting that if we're going to ban TikTok, this is the only way. No, there's time to create a better bill. If there's something wrong with this bill, you can make another one. You don't want to, but you can. And the idea that if we don't pass this bill right now, we'll never ban TikTok, that's just a false dichotomy here. So I think that the American people are being presented with a bill of goods that isn't necessarily what we're being sold. And that's always my concern when Congress works this fast.
Talking with Virginia Cruda, you can check on her great work at the Daily Wire and, of course, here at Newstalk STL. Now, I want to play a little clip for you in the couple minutes we have. And this is just a short clip. And I think it's the psychological cyber warfare coming from TikTok and the addictive nature of it and how it just is going to, I think, lead to, as our God love him, deceased Rush Limbaugh used to say, skulls full of mush. Listen to what a couple of TikTok addicts and creators said at the prospects of this bill. Go ahead, Jerome.
Literally not even a month ago, I quit my job to do TikTok, social media full-time. And now this.
There are 8 years of Generation Z that are now eligible voters in this election year. Do you really want to piss them all off by taking away their favorite app where they make friends, where they make content, where they laugh, where a lot of us creators make our money? You want to take that app away?
So, Virginia, on the one hand, you have someone sobbing. They're despondent. People have called congressional offices saying they're going to kill themselves if TikTok goes away. And on the other hand, people that are, you know, but you don't want to piss us off. You know, it just seems as though there's a hysteria over this by people who have other options. By the way, there's Reels on Facebook and there's Instagram. There's a lot of places to do the business. I'm just worried about what this is doing to young people's minds. They're the future of America. And if the engine is limping along, buried in TikTok, you know, videos of people doing stupid things. I don't know. I'm just concerned about that. Well, is that a valid argument or not? We have a minute.
Look at the reaction when Brett Kavanaugh was confirmed to the Supreme Court. You had protesters literally clawing on the doors of the Supreme Court in protest when Roe was overturned. Look at the insanity of the protests that followed that. There's always going to be an outsized reaction to something that gets taken away from it. You know, even if you give someone $1 a week for, you know, 50 years for no reason, the minute you take away that dollar, they're like, where's my dollar? Well, it's not your dollar. It was my dollar, and I decided not to give it to you. You know, the reaction is, I think, oversized. And when you have a generation that has been raised on TikTok and raised to believe that this is how you communicate, of course it's going to be dramatic and excessive That's how they make money. Now, if you're a 20-something-year-old person and you've quit your job to take a new job, and the government has just told you, oh yeah, we're going to make your job illegal, you'd be upset. Like,
I get it. And we're out of time, but you're right. This is insightful analysis. I hope people tune back into this and listen to this on the podcast. Got to run, Virginia. Thanks so much. See you next time.
Sure.
Okay. Back after this. Stay tuned.